In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, the paranormal legacy of the Second World War.
The story that stands out about Patton for me is that now he died shortly after he was involved in a Jeep crash. Now, both of his daughters claimed that the ghost of Patton either appeared to them or called, believe it or not, called them. One daughter said that she got a long-distance call, a transatlantic call. She could hear his voice and communicated with him briefly, and then it cut off.
I want to tell you about something I discovered recently called Carbon 60. I call it the miracle molecule. Now, you might remember an interview I did recently with a researcher, Chris Burris, who's looking to help people who experience pain, inflammation, loss of sleep, or lost mental acuity with his new C60 company, C60evo.com. He has a product which is a consumable form of Carbon 60 called ESS60 that's been proven in peer-reviewed, published research to extend the lifespan of test rats by 90% while allowing them to live tumor-free. That's pretty amazing. Those rats were given the C60evo.com formula. The formula is a powerful antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C, and it's known to be a powerful anti-inflammatory. C60 is based on Nobel Prize-winning chemistry. I highly recommend ESS60. The mighty Aphrodite and I take a tablespoon every morning, and we're both pain-free and sleeping better than ever. Discover the benefits of Carbon 60. I call it the miracle molecule, ESS60, from C60evo.com. Now, make sure to use the coupon code RS1SPEC. That's RS1SPEC. Buy today at C60evo.com. That's C60evo.com. And don't forget the code RS1SPEC. This product has not been assessed by the FDA and is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serres. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serres.
Welcome to your Wednesday. Well, it's official. Christmas and New Year's are over. We put the last of the Christmas decorations away yesterday, and the boys are back into their daily routines, piano lessons, tennis, schoolwork, and now I'm back into my routine as well. Writer Matt Swain is standing by to discuss some of the dozens of paranormal phenomena that have been witnessed in the European and Pacific theaters, as well as historic locations in the United States. All have been documented quite nicely in his new book, Haunted World War II. Matt is a journalist who currently works as a research writer at Penn State. He's worked as a reporter and as a music reviewer for several newspapers and online outlets. He's a regular contributor to the recently revitalized version of Omni magazine called Omni Reboot. He writes the Antimatter column, which looks at fringe science and the paranormal. Previous books include Haunted Rock and Roll, More Haunted Rock and Roll, Ghosts of Country Music, and America's Haunted Universities. And his latest is Haunted World War II, Soldier Spirits, Ghost Planes, and Strange Synchronicities. Matt Swain, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Did you have a grandfather or relatives that fought in the Second World War?
I did. Neither of my grandfathers fought in the war. My one grandfather worked in the railroad, so he was considered too important in that job. I'm not sure about my other grandfather, but my uncles were all in the war. I had an uncle in the Battle of the Bulge. I had an uncle in the Pacific. So, I mean, it was there was a lot of World War II talk, and of course, I was right there listening with every breath they took.
And how, because you've written about haunted universities and haunted rock and roll, two volumes, ghost stories from the country music. Mm-hmm. How do you approach a book about ghost stories from the Second World War differently, or do you approach it differently?
That's a really good question. And to be honest with you, initially I approached it the way I approach my, because I'm interested in music history, I approached the book on World War II just as I approached the books on haunted rock and roll and country music ghosts, which is I try to find as many stories as possible. I try to cast out as wide a web as possible and find, you know, any type of interesting stories, weird synchronicities, anything like that. But what I quickly discovered with my efforts to create these stories in World War II is that the stories are a lot more they're much heavier, much a lot more death and destruction. You have a lot of, you know, these soldiers who sacrificed their lives. So when I got into this real quickly, I decided that I couldn't have the same approach with the haunted rock and roll stories. And haunted rock and roll stories for me can be a little fun, a little frivolous. I mean, they're not all fun and games, not all jokes, but you know, when you're doing a story about Jim Morrison haunting a bathroom in a Mexican restaurant, it's a heck of a lot different than approaching the ghosts of some of these soldiers who sacrificed their lives on the beaches of Normandy, or some of these Japanese soldiers the Pacific, or even some of the really poignant stories that came from Okinawa and Iwo Jima. So it very quickly changed for me and became much more serious and, like I said, a lot heavier.
Right. Yeah, you have to honor that sacrifice. So
absolutely.
So, yes, obviously you have to handle it with a great deal of reverence. Many books have been written about haunted Civil War battlefields. That's pretty, you know, that territory has been combed over pretty thoroughly. So what then led you to the Second World War? Was it just because you were familiar as a child through your uncles, or was there something in particular about the Second World War that attracted you?
Yeah, and I'll be quite honest about this, is I started to collect stories about the American Civil War, to do ghost stories about the Civil War, because I'm more of a Civil War buff than a World War II buff. But very quickly, I discovered that the territory has been so well covered, and I didn't really think I could add any more stories to it, or even add any angles, fresh angles to the stories that are already out there. So I really just fell back on, you know, those stories that I, you know, grew up with as a kid. And I do enjoy reading about World War II. I had several classes in military history, and we covered World War II pretty well in that. So I had that basic interest. What happened, though, was when I started collecting stories, I started to realize that there's quite a difference between the American Civil War ghost stories and these stories of World War II. And the first is probably obvious, is that they stretch across the globe. So World War II is really the first all-out global conflict, although it kind of gets second billing next to World War I. But you have stories that stretch into the Pacific, into Russia, into Europe, and even some stories that appear right here in the United States in an odd kind of way. So it was a really global conflict. And the other difference that I noticed between the American Civil War ghost stories and World War II ghost stories is that there is actually a third dimension now. So in the Civil War, you didn't have planes. In World War II, you have planes. So this added a few more dimensions to the book that I wrote, because there's a lot of stories about ghost planes, which are not ghosts haunted by pilots, but the plane itself is a ghost. So there's that. There's also these Foo Fighters that I brought into this volume, as well as some mysterious air bases that are haunted, and some actual ghosts who do haunt some of the planes in those displays at the museum. So it really turned into a much broader kind of volume than I probably would have experienced had I just stuck with the Civil War stories.
Sure, it's a big canvas. How do you collect stories like this? Because not many World War II vets around anymore. Every year, fewer and fewer.
Right, and that's a really sad thing about this, and I think it kind of underscores why I felt the need to do this as well, is because a lot of these stories are starting to disappear. And one of the things that I learned while writing the book about university ghost stories is that ghost stories help preserve history. I mean, they're not great at telling all the stories of a historical event, but they do give you the interest to dive into it, and they introduce you to some of the characters and some of the events. So, you know, one of the ways that I start looking for it is really going back on my own study of the war itself. So I'm thinking about key figures, key battles, and then I go on a search through, start out on the web, but I'll look in biographies, I'll look in newspaper accounts, magazine accounts, a lot of web accounts, people will tell their stories there. So a lot of the ghost stories that I find are people who have experienced these ghosts as tourists, overseas, and, you know, some other places, like in magazines, they'll talk about this. The ghost stories of the vets themselves, I don't really have a lot of them in this volume.
What about your uncles? Did they ever have any ghost stories or strange synchronicities or anything, odd occurrences?
That's a great question, and I can't remember anything like that. I just remember vividly the story that my uncle was a radio man in the Battle of the Bulge and got stuck behind the lines as the Germans poured through. And I don't know whether he was supposed to be behind the lines or he just got stuck there, but he recounted wearing all white and being buried in the snow, and he heard German voices come across. So I've had stories like that, but I can't say that I've had any. They never told me any of the ghost stories.
You know, we just passed the 77th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And, you know, as you say, it's a day that lives in infamy, but it's a day that lives on in many other ways, as you suggest. Tell us a little bit about some of the supernatural activity around Pearl Harbor, both the naval base, I guess, and the airfields and so forth.
Sure. I would have to say that, you know, again, this is sacred ground, but it's also haunted ground. And, you know, this is another story that is on American soil in Hawaii. And what I found is that Pearl Harbor is probably, just as it's probably one of the most sacred sites for historians and for people who honor and respect the veterans who gave their lives there, it's also one of the most haunted spots, paranormally speaking. And the ghost stories range from one of the ones that I recall is that some of the phenomena is actually like you can take pictures of. And in one case, a tourist, a woman was taking pictures of the area around the Arizona Memorial where the USS Arizona sunk. And when she took the picture, she didn't really see any ghosts or anything like that. But when she analyzed the film, she could see faces in the water itself, and they look like the faces of young sailors. So that's some of the phenomena that you have there, but you also have stories that kind of mix in with what I would call ghost lore around the area, too. And this one also takes place in the USS Arizona. And the backstory to this one is that right before the attack on Pearl Harbor, right before the Japanese attacked, there was a sailor who was on watch on the USS Arizona, and he left the ship briefly during watch, which is a no-no. And seconds later, as he started returning to the ship, he saw that it was attacked. And so there's stories now that people see a figure of a lone sailor looking out onto the memorial, and he is usually kind of misty and kind of encompassed in mist. So that's another story there. And as you point out, that the area around Pearl Harbor wasn't the only target for the attack. There were several air bases and several army bases around the base that were attacked as well. And this has led to a lot of ghost stories that you'll find in the Schofield Barracks and Hickam Air Base. And some of those range again from people seeing ghostly figures to, in one case, one of the barracks was used as a morgue. And people usually around late at night will hear, usually it's the guards who are on duty in that building, they'll hear what sounds like the steps starting to shake. And then they'll hear rumbles coming down the steps. And then some people have even said that the staircase itself starts to shake and buckle, almost like more and more people are coming down the steps. And the interesting thing there is the story that I got was really from a guard who worked there. And he noticed that at the time that he was there, the CQ desk, which is where the guards usually sit, is typically indoors in the building itself. But for some reason, this was pushed out. And according to him, it was pushed out because of all this ghostly activity. There's also stories about this same building. It starts to smell like corpses, probably relating back to its use as a morgue during the attack.
Wow. When you collect these stories, you know, if we're talking about the Eastern Front, obviously, you're dealing with Russians, or if you're in the Pacific Theater, you're dealing with the Japanese, or maybe even the Chinese culture. Do they tell ghost stories differently? Is there any difference in the way different cultures approach a ghost story?
Interesting. You know, I will say that the Japanese, the stories that involve the Japanese feel very much like their tradition of ancestor worship. And they also seem to be centered on going back home. And again, you know, as I was mentioned earlier, these stories are so poignant, and there's one about in particular about I think he's a Japanese military contractor who lives in Iwo Jima. Before he goes to Japan, he shuttles back and forth from Iwo Jima to Japan. He tends to get a knock late at night, and what he does is he opens up the door and says, "I'm leaving tomorrow, come on with me," because he believes that these Japanese soldiers, these are ghosts of Japanese soldiers who were either committed suicide on the island or who were buried and burned alive in some of the caves on that island. And he believes that they want to go back to Japan. So there are elements of that yearning to return home. And I think it's a connection with the Japanese Shinto religion, which does have an element of ancestor worship in it.
What's the most bizarre ghost story you write about in your book?
I would say the most bizarre story that I found, and again, you know, I'm trying to think about key terms when I'm approaching these stories. So the one person I really wanted to look for is whether any of the German generals were haunting any of the battlefields, like Rommel. So during my search for Rommel, I was searching for ghost stories about him. I expected him to be, you know, maybe there might be some in North Africa, or there might be some on the Atlantic seawall, which he was the mastermind in the German defenses there. But I actually found him in the American South in West Virginia. There's a ghost story that revolves around this mysterious story that between the wars, after World War I and before World War II, there was allegedly a secret mission where the German generals came to the United States to tour Civil War battlefields, in particular the Shenandoah Valley, where Stonewall Jackson was so masterful in some of his campaigns. And so there's one story of an inn that's haunted by Rommel, or they believe it's haunted by Rommel because he allegedly stayed there. And then there's a graveyard where some people have seen this figure standing over the graves of some of the Confederate war dead. And it looks like he's dressed in a German uniform with a long trench coat and you know, the distinctive kind of headgear that the German field marshal used to wear. So that was one of the weirdest ones, because I wasn't expecting to find him in the United States at all. But also I got a chance to write about the Civil War, which made me happy as well.
Is there a history of Rommel being in the United States before the war?
Well, that's the real debate that goes on even today, and I try to share both sides of it. There's really no historical evidence that happened whatsoever. But the believers in this story counter, well, if it was a secret mission, why would there be any type of airplane tickets or anything like that? Of course, they wouldn't have done that. So that debate still rages. I could not find a shred of evidence to suggest that he was here. Even in his diaries or memoirs, there were no mentions. So it's still up for debate.
What about Patton? Because everything I know about Patton is based on George C. Scott's portrayal in that epic movie. But based on that, I mean, he certainly was, he believed in reincarnation, that he had participated in, you know, Roman battles and fought with the ancient Greeks and so forth. Fascinating historical figure. So surely someone must have seen Patton's ghost.
Well, yeah, and there's the story that stands out about Patton for me, and is one of the reasons why I tried to find his ghost stories, is that he claimed to have a vision on the battlefield of seeing his ancestors, who were Confederate heroes, urging him on when he was injured during World War One, and he claimed that they kind of watched over him. With Patton himself, now he died shortly after he was involved in a Jeep crash. Now both of his daughters claimed that Patton, the ghost of Patton, either appeared to them or called, believe it or not, called them. One daughter said that she got a long distance call, a transatlantic call, and she used to receive those quite often from her father. But this was different because she could hear his voice and communicated with him briefly, and then it cut off. And so she immediately tried to reconnect with the operator, and the operator said that there was no call. The other daughter claimed that she woke up late at night, early in the morning, and she saw her father at the foot of her bed. And I think he said some pleasantries to her and asked how she was, and then disappeared. And that was at the same moment that he was dying of his injuries in a military hospital.
Fascinating. The idea that this is a debate that sort of rages in the paranormal community, and there's the one camp that believes that ghosts actually have consciousness and that you can communicate with them, and then there is sort of the other camp that believes that ghosts are just sort of an echo of emotion, or obviously in war there's a lot of trauma and violence and so forth, and somehow that emotion becomes embedded in the surrounding in buildings and so forth. Where do you land in this debate?
I land way outside of that, actually, and I do see in collecting this volume that there are instances which I would classify the phenomena more as that echo, especially, you know, when I talk about the ghosts in the Eastern Front. They seem to be echoes of long past. And then there are other ones where they're interactive. This, you know, ghost of George Patton talking to his daughters in whatever means or manner he can. So that seems very interactive. But over, I think this is my fifth volume that I've written, I'm starting to move more towards the idea about consciousness being involved in this in one way or the other. When I talk about music ghosts, I think there's a consciousness-raising activity involved in either playing music or listening to music that raises one's consciousness, where you're at least, at the very least, open to some of these spiritual activities. So that's one thing. And in war, I think it's the trauma. And I think when you're in an area, when you're in a battlefield, you are kind of, your consciousness is ready and for these experiences. So a lot of times I wonder whether the ghost, to me, these ghost stories are more about us, the living, than they are about the dead. I think those are the lessons that they are inspiring is really coming from us. So as I go through this, I'm starting more and more to see almost like a bigger picture rather than just these, well, what type of spirits are they? It's like, I always want to say, well, what are they telling you? Rather than, you know, what are they?
More of my conversation with Matt Swain when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free Bright Side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
CBD oil seems to be all the rage, but it's important to learn the difference and know the background of something that isn't new, but in fact very, very old. Did you know that the hemp plant which CBD is extracted from has been around for over 10,000 years? And this is probably a conservative figure. Ancient Life Oil is a trusted name for high-quality CBD that can help you reach your ideal well-being. I take an eyedropper full of Ancient Life CBD oil every morning. And one of the things I've noticed, and the people around me have noticed, is that I'm far less anxious, less stressed, more relaxed, and that's a great feeling. It also leaves me more focused. And I even find that after exercising, I recover from muscle soreness much quicker. Ancient Life Oil, it's big relief in a little bottle, and they have products for your pets as well. Ancient Life CBD oil has no psychoactive effect, and it won't get you high. And this product is legal in all 50 states. When you're healthy, you're happy. And the truth about this wonderful plant is that it wants to give back to mankind. Life, longevity, and happiness. Ancient Life Oil from AncientLifeOil.com.
Physicists say that there is as many as 12 hyperdimensions. Here are just three of them. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Pretty cool, huh? Here's an extra one. Conspiracy Unlimited. Hey, how about one more? Conspiracy Unlimited. And the great thing is we have 6 hyperdimensions left. Conspiracy Unlimited.
5.
Or something like that. I'll ask Richard later.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Matt Swain stays with us, and we are discovering the paranormal legacy of the Second World War. And in his book, Haunted World War II, we'll encounter dozens of phenomena in the European and Pacific theaters, as well as historic locations in the U.S., where the spirits of the dead are unable, I guess, or unwilling to let the past go. For example, the ghost of an admiral gives a tour of the USS Lexington. Tourists at Dieppe are haunted by the terrifying sounds of battle. A full-body apparition appears at Schofield Barracks. Ghost tanks are witnessed patrolling the Russian front. Phantom footsteps shock the guards at Hickam Air Force Base. Ghostly soldiers knock on doors at Iwo Jima. A spirit sailor keeps eternal watch at Pearl Harbor. Matt's book also shares fascinating stories of supernatural warfare. We're going to learn about wizards and witches in England casting spells to hold the Germans at bay. Dion Fortune and the Fraternity of the Inner Light working magic in support of the Allies. And Aleister Crowley waging a psychic campaign to capture high-ranking Nazi Rudolf Hess. Haunted World War II explores the high strangeness and haunted aftermath of the most devastating clash of nations in living history. Oh, fascinating. Yes, that's a great point. Keeping along with the sort of the famous ghosts, and we talked about Patton, you talked about Rommel. What about Ike Eisenhower, the great general during the war?
Yeah, Ike actually appears in a couple different ghost stories in my book. The one is in the United States, and I'm writing a volume on railroad ghosts, so that one appears in this one as well. But the National Railroad Museum in Green Bay, Wisconsin, they have on display a car that he used in England. It would ferry him around from place to place right before the lead up to the invasion of Normandy. And there are a few things that have happened there. Notably, one of the volunteers was cleaning up and vacuuming the floor, the carpet in this car that I think it's called the Bullet, or it has a name like that because he used it to go across so fast, across England so fast. But so this volunteer was cleaning up and then decided to take a break about halfway through. When he came back, the vacuum cleaner was all, you know, rolled up and moved, and he noticed that the carpet was immaculately vacuumed, and the lines were all straight. And so he went around and asked people who had access, because he had locked up the car on his way to break, you know, he asked them, you know, who was there at night, or who was there during the break. And no one claimed it was them, but one thing he found out later was that Ike was very meticulous cleaner, and that he insisted that these lines in the vacuum, when they would vacuum, would be very straight. So it sounded like something the ghost of Ike would do. Also in Gettysburg, there's a farmhouse that both Ike and Mamie are allegedly haunting. And so there are a lot of stories that have come cropped up around that too.
We've got to talk about Churchill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Winston Churchill, he has the honor, in my book at least, of both seeing a ghost and being a ghost. So his adventures in seeing a ghost occurred in the United States. He was a frequent guest at the White House and would stay in what's called now called the Lincoln's Bedroom. I don't know whether it was called that at that point or not. But in any event, he was there one evening. He was in meetings with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and he had just finished up with his bath, and I really hate to take your listeners there, but he got out of the bathroom completely naked and walked into the bedroom, and he looks by the dresser, and there's the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. Churchill said that the ghost looked at him, and he replied in complete Churchill fashion, Mr. President, you've caught me at a disadvantage, and then the president faded away. So he apparently told that story. The other story is that there is a subway in the UK that allegedly is haunted by Churchill. And according to a lot of stories, Churchill would Churchill would use this subway as a kind of a shelter during the bombing of London, during the Blitz, and during other times. And a few people have seen the ghost of Churchill in this area. And there was actually a flurry of activity a few years ago when a cameraman down there actually has footage of what looks like the ghost of Churchill.
Fascinating. Now, he lived to a ripe old age. I think he died, I think he was 90.
Yeah.
In the mid-1960s, as I recall.
Right, and still working up till the end.
I love that story about the White House and seeing the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. Stoic as always. That's classic Churchill. Mr. President, you've caught me at disadvantage.
Right.
Where most of us would just run around screaming.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely would have.
Ghost planes and haunted airfields. That's a section two in Haunted World War II. Let's talk about the Phantom Flying Fortress.
The Phantom Flying Fortress is, I think you're referring to the one that the crew bailed out.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. Now, whether there's any ghostly activity involved with it, I don't know. But I found the story so interesting, and you know, to back it up, there was a B-17 on a mission, and I think they got their plane was damaged during the bombing run, and they lost a lot of speed about halfway back to base. They decided to bail out. And the crew made it out safely. But the weird part was that in this airfield in, I think it was Belgium, the anti-aircraft crews were watching this big lumbering four-engine bomber coming down for a perfect landing right over their positions, right onto the landing strip. And then it kind of went off. The only hint they had that there was a problem was that it went into the field and sort of crashed. And so the air crews went over, rushed over to see what was wrong. They expected there to be injured pilots on board, but there was no one on board. Apparently this B-17 had flown, you know, a few hundred miles and made a perfect landing at this air base in essentially the middle of nowhere.
That's remarkable.
So, yeah.
This is before autopilot.
Right. No autopilot involved, no GPS. It just went on its own, you know. So I don't know whether there was some spirit on that plane guiding it or whether that's just another one of those weird World War II coincidences.
The British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Before we get to the supernatural on the high seas, let's stick with the ghost planes for a little bit if we can. Now, are there actual planes that were obviously in service during the war that people still see flying around?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the ghost planes. Actually, these stories continue to filter out, especially from the UK. Even today, I think some of the ones I used in the book were from the early 2000s to mid 2000s. And as I recall, as I was just getting ready to go to press, they were having there was another ghost plane flap, if I can use that pun. But the one in particular that really gripped me what occurred over what's called Dark Peak. And Dark Peak, the background from that, from what I gather, is that it's an area with considerable air traffic, particularly in World War II, and there were a lot of crashes during World War II and even afterwards to such an extent that the Dark Peak gets this moniker of the UK's Bermuda Triangle. So this, there were several incidences, and again, they're almost like a series of these sightings, but in one case, a couple was driving down the highway. I think it was the A6 highway in the UK, and they looked out the window, and there was this huge four-engine bomber that was flying so low that they thought it was definitely going to crash. And they had the windows rolled down. It made no noise, which was a little mystifying for them. It passed over. They didn't see any crashes or anything like that. They immediately reported it to their to the police, and the police and the emergency officials also told them that they had had several reports of this plane going over. So, you know, naturally, the skeptic side of me, you know, says, well, maybe there was an air show. And there wasn't an air show at that time. And sometimes you might think that they're mistaking modern aircraft with this, with these World War II aircrafts. But as I explain in a little bit, that didn't pan, that excuse didn't pan out either. And another fact about this, this series of sightings is that the sightings occurred kind of all over this Dark Peak area, and it didn't resemble like any flight path, any straight line or even curved line that you would see airplane take. So all of these, and the other thing was that there was one of the witnesses to this actually worked on an airbase during World War II and knew the difference between, let's say, a C-130 that's a modern plane than a Lancaster bomber. So you have all these debates going back and forth about really what's happening, but that's one of the areas that is haunted by these ghost planes. These are planes that shouldn't be in the sky, but are. At least these people are claiming to see those.
You know, you just mentioned the Lancaster bomber, and it twigged in my memory another story my father had told me. In he came back from Europe in 1946, and soon after was dating my mom. They were married in 51, so this would have been in the early 50s, and at this time they lived outside of our hometown in a little village, Oakland, Ontario. And I remember him telling me the story. I had forgotten about it until you said Lancaster bomber.
Hmm.
You're driving along this country road, and he sees out the windshield this Lancaster bomber flying over these farmers' fields very low to the ground. And in fact, it flew over the road in front of him. And he just kind of watched it, but it didn't make a sound. And then it was gone. And now, again, it's possible there were, you know, Lancaster bombers still around and in working order at that time, but he just believed it was a hallucination. Go ahead.
Let me match you with one from my own family. And this was probably, I was just a kid. I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And my mom and dad used to wake up pretty early, 5-6 o'clock in the morning. I think this was a early summer, maybe late summer morning, and they liked to take morning walks. And so they left the porch and they were going down the alley. And my mom told me that they saw a plane that was huge. Now, you know, my dad was a World War II buff, and he always claimed that he didn't think it was a World War II aircraft, but it was definitely a big airplane that was probably, 100, 200 feet off the ground, which is incredibly low for where I live, which was in town. You know, it wasn't like we were out in the country at all. And they said the plane flew over. They could see illumination from inside of the aircraft, and It went over a field nearby, a little football field near our house, banked into the sky, and just disappeared without a sound. And my mom always claimed that that was the ghost plane, and that's one of the reasons why I was searching for some of these stories in the first place. And, you know, I was just lucky enough to uncover a few in the UK, because during World War II, you know, England was essentially the aircraft carrier for allies, for the Allied troops. So I figured if they were going to appear anywhere, they would appear in UK. And so, you know, I do find these stories not just in the UK, but in the United States, and also out west, right after Pearl Harbor, there's an incident which some claim was a ghost plane.
Oh, can you tell me anything more about that one?
Well, there are two. There's one that right after the attack on Pearl Harbor, in fact, it was so near the time of Pearl Harbor that the people in California didn't even know about the attack. This plane came over in considerable distress, and the witnesses saw it. It was a American World War II plane, fighter plane, flew over. They sent the fire crews out into the woods to try to find this, and they found nothing. And so that was always they claim that there were a few planes in the – well, they don't claim. There were a few planes in the air, American aircraft fighter planes in the air fighting the Japanese attack. And there was one crash in particular where an American pilot – died during this attack on the Japanese fighter plane. I think it was shot down. And the story that came around this was that this was somehow related to that crash during Pearl Harbor. However, you know, Pearl Harbor's 1,000-2,000 miles away from where this incident occurred. And then there's another one, I think a year later, where a plane was flying in, was picked up on radar. They sent out escorts to see whether it was a friendly aircraft or whether it was a Japanese aircraft. They saw that it was a friendly aircraft, and the escorts followed it into California, where it actually did crash. They never found the pilot in the plane, and they also noticed that the carriage had been ripped off of the wheels had been ripped off of the bottom of the plane, and it was actually flying in without wheels. So how the plane even got airborne, because there were a few excuses or a few reasons that were passed around, that perhaps this pilot was crash landed on an island and fixed the plane to get it in flight, but there would have been no way for that to happen. So there were several of those types of ghost plane incidences, and how they relate to the entire effort there is kind of a mystery.
I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name, but years ago I spoke with — he was an American who was living in Russia, and he had gone to work for the Kodak, Eastman Kodak company in, I believe, Moscow, retired there, and decided to live on there. And he wrote a story that he says was related to him by someone who was present at Thule Air Force Base in Greenland, and that this had happened sometime in the 80s or 90s. Details are getting a little sketchy, but there was a World War II vintage bomber, and it was called Kingbird 50, and it was back in the 40s. It was approaching Thule Air Force Base in a winter storm, and it went off radar and vanished, never heard from again until supposedly the 1980s or 90s, and they're getting at Thule Air Force Base, they're getting a distress call on a sideband on the radio that's rarely ever used, and it identified itself as Kingbird 50. And supposedly this bomber, it made a crash landing out in Greenland. They sent out a search party, and they found this plane, and the crew on board frozen to death, perfectly preserved. And, of course, everything was locked down. It was all hush-hush. They supposedly took this plane apart, shipped it back to the United States, and no one was supposed to say anything, but someone at Thule Air Force Base leaked this remarkable story to this gentleman in Moscow who told me about it. It could be apocryphal. Whether it is or not, I don't know, but it was one hell of a yarn, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And there's also this... one of the suggestions was that somehow people are conflating both of those accounts. So in other words, there was this strange crash landing the year after Pearl Harbor that the people then morphed into this more of a ghost lore story about this ghost plane that flew over and then disappeared. So you do have some of that to me, makes it a little more fascinating. So how these things can kind of morph in the imagination.
We were going to talk about the supernatural on the high seas, and obviously a lot of haunted naval vessels. I don't know if this is in the book, but it was a troop carrier that's now, I think, stationed, is it off Long Beach or Los Angeles somewhere, Santa Monica, the Queen Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposedly one of the most haunted locations in the United States. Do you talk about the Queen Mary in your book?
I left that one out because there are some stories that relate to World War II, but I wasn't sure how much that it would relate to World War II. So, you know, I made that decision to leave that out. And as a matter of fact, I had so many other ghost stories from the fighting ships themselves. So that's one of the reasons. But I have heard about it, and I've heard, you know, I think a few people have said that it's, as you mentioned, the most haunted spot in the United States.
Matt Swain. Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a flash to tell you a little bit about an upcoming episode. Say, I just published the January 2020 issue of my monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum. If you missed out, no problem. All you need to do is go to my website, strangeplanet.ca, and register. Just enter your name and email address, and you'll start receiving Inner Sanctum every month for free, starting in February. And once you register, your name automatically goes into the monthly draw for free Strange Planet merch. It's so simple. Just go to strangeplanet.ca, enter your name and email address. The Inner Sanctum, yours, absolutely free. Register today at strangeplanet.ca. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, an electrical engineer and author discusses the possibility we're living in a computer simulation.
Essentially, in a dream, you're kind of brainstorming. You're thinking about things in a sort of a fantasy way. Your mind can go, or your consciousness can go wherever it wants. But in the physical reality, it can't quite, because it's constrained by the rules of our physical reality, the physics engine, and the fact that other people are observing the same thing.
Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.